Welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, the NBC Network, the podcaster channel, the whole shebang here with my new guest today with the show. We're going to talk about, we are in the health world here, and certainly there's always discussions about the pros and cons of what we call vaccines or shots. And this is not a controversial show, but certainly we're going to talk about an experience. And really, my guest is going to take us through a journey of how some of the stuff did save a dear life, and inspired her to even write a book about this stuff. And now my guest is someone who's been a staff reporter, who has worked for papers, national, regional publications, still writes, for publications. And so a journalist at the core, and now an author of this particular book. And we're going to talk about the book, shortly. So without any further ado, I have with me Ronnie Robbins. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, it is a pleasure and an honor. And certainly, your story is intriguing because, as I opened the discussion today, I kind of mentioned that this is not a controversial show because there had been a lot of controversy and debates about the merits of, shots and no shots and vax and no vax. And, this is not that kind of show. We're not talking about, that bad or good. We're talking about just literally the importance of something that can save somebody's life. And it did. And the story that you actually wrote is really full of this particular, concept here. But we'll take it further than that. So before we even get deeper into that, let's talk about Ronnie. I mean, your background is so impressive. I mean, you've been interviewed, and we're the best of the best. You also have been published in a lot of places that are prominent. So let's talk about your journey and the experience just doing the work you do. And then how did you possibly decide to translate into writing a book, for example?
So I guess if you go back, I always liked writing. I liked my penmanship. When you got a clean notebook, I would start fresh. And then after a little bit, your notebook would get messed up. But I always took pride in my penmanship. I learned calligraphy. I somehow developed an interest in poetry, and that developed into lyrics for I was playing guitar. So I wrote the lyrics to some, I used my poetry to create lyrics to pieces of music. And then I took a journalism class in high school, and the assignment was to write the opening copy for the yearbook. This was senior year, and I did, and they loved it. And I pretty much wrote all the copy in the yearbook, in the high school, in our graduation year yearbook. So that was my first introduction to journalism. And I got a scholarship to the University of South Carolina. I'm from New York, so you can imagine I checked some boxes there. But I got a scholarship for journalism and had just started my, that was like, wow, I didn't really understand I was good at this yet. They're already accepting me into journalism, and I worked my way up the school newspaper to be editor of that paper, of the college paper. So things were really progressing, and got out, worked for dailies for a while, worked for, weeklies for a while. While I was working for one publication, more of a specialty publication, which I've gotten into, including healthcare more recently, my mom gave me cassette tapes that my grandfather had left the family. And I initially just wrote a column about leaving your memories behind as a legacy to your progeny and giving memories a voice. And later on, I decided that I would stay home from journalism. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's a cover whenever news breaks job. So it was nonstop, and I wasn't doing a great job of being a mom. So I stayed home when I had my second child and transcribed the tapes and developed it further into this novel. And meanwhile, I was always freelancing for different publications, including some pretty big ones that picked up my story. Huffington Post and Forbes would be the biggest, New York Daily News, and WebMD, which was my most recent position up until about a year ago. And now I freelance for Daily and Medscape WebMD still. So you know, I'm still writing on, I've had articles on the front page, and some of the themes of my novel with tuberculosis is a big theme, and healthcare challenges are, I actually am working on a story that I just handed in. Well, I worked on it today and I handed it in, that'll be on that subject. I don't want to give too much away, but it's still in the news today, very much so. So everything has come full circle for me. A lot of the themes of the novel have to do with my life and the journey that I've been on, both as a writer and also as a person who's a member of a Jewish family and the culture behind that.
Well, Ronnie, thank you. First of all, there's quite a bit there. And I'm going to go first, you know, to just the concept of journalism. I mean, it's big. I mean, journalism right now, it's like, I mean, everything is journalism around us. I mean, think about it now. I mean, even social media is part of that big, you know, concept now, right? It's just, it's not the exact traditional way, but I'm saying, like, you know, there's news everywhere. There's information everywhere. Correct. There are people who actually write these things, and it takes a lot of skills. And, you know, you discovered that gift, I guess, you know, a long time ago in when you went into the early days of high school, and you managed to go through that process. Now, I know it's not an easy, you know, world either. I mean, to make it and to really land a good, you know, spots and good articles and good places where you can place those articles and things like that. It's not that simple. And there's a lot of competition, I would say. I mean, it's a very competitive word, and it is what it is, right? But you've done it. You know, but then I love the concept of how you wrote different articles for different things, but certainly you started focusing on the health concept of it. Now, I do actually dabble a little bit with WebMD and some of these, you know, I get a lot of articles, you know, of the stuff that I kind of read through, because again, we try to bring in some stuff. Originally, when I even started, my social media was all about articles that are published and blogs and things like that. So that's how we kind of filled in some of the blanks between the shows and things like that. And it was just like, and so it was also a learning thing for me. But there's a lot of stuff that comes when it comes to healthcare, obviously. I mean, it's everybody, right? There's no one in the world that cannot possibly talk about healthcare, and it affects everyone. And, you know, you mentioned something very interesting, because TB, tuberculosis, is actually almost like a standard process in even in the workplace, right? You know, you go to a job these days, you know, you got to get, you know, a test for it, right? Most of the, especially if you work in the healthcare, that's a guaranteed test you're going to get. They do that little skin thing, you know, come back in 3 days. Even job employments, you know, sometimes you don't get an employment until you double check those things. You know, So it is a big thing, and it does affect a lot of people. I mean, we are in the U.S., and yes, we are one of the, I guess, more advanced countries, but yet we also have a good immigration flow. At least it's been the history, right? And tuberculosis is something that's always been, you know, linked, I would say, to immigrants in parts of the world that may have lesser of a healthcare system. At least that's how it's presented or, you know, looked at. So I know the impressive part about today's discussion is that, you know, I am no expert, and you know, you are certainly a journalist who digs in, and that's the thing about a reporter. I mean, reporters, they dive into deep and they do this stuff, and they really get everywhere. I mean, and they get the scope. I mean, really, that's what it is. You get the 911, the 411, the 311, all those digits. You get them because you want to make sure that you deliver, you know, the story, you deliver the truth, the news, the whole line, right? And you do it now. I know that there is a story why you picked TB specifically. And I think that's why I alluded earlier about the story about, like, you know, how you got literally, I guess you had the vision, or, you know, the feeling that you wanted to do this as a legacy. And it does touch on your, I guess, grandfather, right?
Yes. Yes.
So those tapes that you had, those things, you know, were kind of like your source of information. And you
correct.
Took that into the history piece of it, and your lineage, your history as a person, as a family, as a culture, and you brought it to light to today. But it is affecting, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of similarities. So let's talk about, you know, that whole journey and how you kind of put it together, and also what did you find about this particular illness in a way, and, you know, guide us through the protocols and, you know, the myths, if there are any, and so on and so forth. So I know you can deep dive with me, and I know you wrote an article, and so we're not going to go into the details of the article, but certainly your research, you know, over time, and we can talk about different topics that you also covered in WebMD and what you do now in terms of freelancing. That's a lot.
It was WebMD. Then it was Medscape. Medscape is more of the professional arm. So doctors, and I cover medical students and residents. But back to your question, tuberculosis. So my grandfather was a clinical trial patient for streptomycin. And that was an experimental, that was the beginning of what is used today to treat. It paved the way for drugs that are now used to treat tuberculosis, is what I learned today and within the past couple of days. But it was the basis of it. And he was in on the ground level of that. So think about the when COVID was, when we were dealing with COVID, which is very similar to tuberculosis. And in fact, a lot of the resources that were had been used in the past for tuberculosis were repurposed for COVID. And so we might have thought that TB had, you know, was not even around anymore, but it just was in the background, but it's come back. It is the largest killer, infectious disease killer. Now that we don't have COVID, it has taken its place back as the largest worldwide killer, global killer of people, you know, from infectious diseases, largest infectious disease killer. My grandfather was in on the ground level of that. And he was told he was terminal at 26, but he lived till 86, obviously, because I'm part of the picture. Because he was a clinical trial patient, and, you know, a test case for streptomycin, he saved his life and countless others, and now paved the way for the future of what, you know, what we're dealing with. And remember what I was saying was COVID, you know, we were so excited to get those vaccines and any kind of treatments that there were out there for that when this was going on. So imagine what the same thing was going on back then. Immigrants were coming to America. This was, he came in the 1920s, and, you know, when he was in his 20s, and soon after he arrived here, he got TB, and he had to be separated from his family. My grandmother was raising the children and keeping them separate, because that's still what you have to do. You, same as we did, you know, you have to, you know, stay sequestered from anyone so that you don't, you know, spread it to them. It's very contagious. It can be. We've come a long way since then, though, but you still have to be, you know, secluded from others when you have this. So, and we're still dealing with it. Like you said, it's better in the United States than everywhere else. But people can go to those countries and bring it back, or they can come to this country and bring it to us. So, you know, it is still in the news today. A lot of the themes of my book are still in the news today. That's just one of them.
Well, thank you. Well, again, TB is actually a quarantine worthy, because, I mean, if you have it, it is respiratory and kind of, you know, can get very easily, you know, given to other people. And so I think through, like everything else, right, you cough and it's in the air, and I think it can, I'm not mistaken, it's even airborne. So it certainly goes into particles, whatever. Maybe not the word airborne can be a little bit, I'm not a scientist.
No, it is.
It is. All right. You know, I just, cause you know, like, you know, so there is, you can contagiously, you know, convey, you know, an illness to someone, you know, by touching stuff, or saliva or stuff. But when you, it's in the air, it's droplets that are flowing in, you know, I mean, we sneeze and that's all there is. And we've seen, you know, that it's amazing, cause that's depicted in a lot of, like, you know, I guess, viral movies and things like that. Like, you know, what do you call that? Big one that was with Dustin Hoffman back in the 90s, Outbreak, I think that was the movie.
Oh,
that was one of the ones that kind of depicted the magnitude of what a virus can be, and, you know, a lot similar to what we experienced during the pandemic. But certainly, this is not the first pandemic we've had. I mean, certainly 2020 or 1919 with the flu, Spanish flu, that time of frame, you know, that's almost recurrent, you know, a century later. But you're right, TB has been an active, you know, I guess, viral infection that is dangerous, and it is bad. And as you said, people have to stay away until it's clear. I mean, a lot of people have shots, you know, at least, you know, in some of the third world countries that I know, they get those specific, you know, TB, you know, treatments, you know, hopefully they get, I guess, safe in a way. I mean, you know what it does? Yes. It's really, it kind of protects you. So you know, but it's still in you. That's the thing. Like even when you test for it, and if it shows that you have positive for it, that means you have to just take measures and things like that. Cause it may be dormant, but it can be in somebody's body, you know, alive, ready at the first, you know, potential, you know, opportunity, it can come up. So it is dangerous and it's risky business. But now I love the concept that you said that your grandfather was 26 and he lived to be 86, yet he was terminal at that time. And, you know, again, we're almost, you know, that's like 60 years later, and everything changed in those 6 decades in terms of science and mm-hmm. I guess, you know, discovery and the medicine advancement and so on and so forth. So it's really that, you know, how things transform. But really at the time, you know, hey, listen, you got this. That's it. Sorry, bad news. You know, I mean, that's like, you know, it's like it's the old way, right? But now yeah. we have all these advances. But he was part of that. I was cutting edge, I guess, at the time, or at least the beginning of discovery and treatment and testing. Now, trials is something that is very common in all practice. I've had multiple interviews with you know, experts. And again, drug trials and treatment trials are very common. And, you know, you mentioned we referred to the pandemic. They had the same thing during the pandemic where we had, you know, a few trials that are done. I mean, they have different phases, and the largest trial is actually when it goes to the public, but really there's different levels. But I think you're alluding to the idea that he was one of the first ones to be tested, clearly. I mean, so he kind of volunteered. Is that how it was?
Yeah, when you're told you're terminal, you'll do whatever it takes to, you know, sure. There's an experimental treatment we're working on. I'll do it, you know, and I think that still happens today. You know, if there's some experiment, you know, many of the experiments are, you know, work out. So it's worth taking a chance when your alternative is death. So, you know, you might as well experiment a little bit and see.
Well, that's a great point, because, you know, some people may be a little against the idea of trials, but as you said, you know, it's not, you know, people volunteer for these things because yes. they're really, you know, hey, listen, we have this. It could be your lifesaver. It could buy you a few years. It could buy you a few decades, you know, mm-hmm. Nobody knows, right? But you take the steps, the necessary steps, and you actually take a leap of faith, and hopefully it works out. Now, it does work out. As we know, we haven't advanced in medicine and all these drugs and stuff without trials, right? So people have been part of these things. And yeah, ultimately, they live, you know, a longer life. Now, I don't want to generalize because I don't know the details. I'm sure there are bad outcomes as well. But with the hope that those are lesser in the numbers than the bigger numbers. I think that's where the controversy is, you know. Do we want to accept? Like, a lot of people are, you know, pro, and some, you know, maybe some are pro, some against it. The idea is like, hey, we don't want humans are guinea pigs kind of concept, and we're putting them to try. Love what you said. When someone is at, you know, no one can decide for someone that is actually being told that that's the outcome, that's your diagnosis, this is it, right? The best thing you're going to do is you're going to find an alternative choice. And if that is what's available to you, you're going to take it. I mean, it's like, you know, that's like the Hail Mary kind of concept, right? You're going to mm-hmm. do that. You're going to make it happen. So wow. Well, so how, I mean, do you have the story? How did it work for him, and how long was it? I mean, anything that you found in those trials, or at least later on through your research?
I don't remember those details about how long he was in it. I do know, though, that he missed like most of one of my aunt's lives. And she always felt like, you know, she was overlooked. She missed out on him being there for her because he was sick a lot. He was in and out of hospitals, in and out of sanatoriums, you know, and rehabilitation. So my grandmother had to go it alone at a time when women were not breadwinners, and, you know, and that was very hard on the family. I mean, she had young children. He started out when he was 26. I mean, by then they had a number of children, but they had more children when she was 40. So I guess he was in and out and had some more kids, you know, but that was 1930s, 1940s, you know, that's what I would tell you. I don't have it in front of me, the dates, but I believe it was in the 1940s when streptomycin came about from writing this story today. So don't hold me to it. But he was dealing with that for many years. And let's see, 1953, there was an article in the New York Daily News, which is part of my book too. Not the article, but he there was a I know he was still dealing with it then, because he was in a workplace shooting spree. A gunman came in, wanted his paycheck. They did work while they were in rehabilitation, or they were learning how to have some skills, but being all by, you know, within just with TB patients. And somebody came in with a gun, and it was in an article in the New York Daily News in 1953. So that's at least 10 years there. He actually spoke to the gunman that's in the article. In my novel, he saves people yet again in this workplace shooting spree. I ended up full circle writing, being a freelancer for the New York Daily News years and years later, decades later. So life is just weird that way. But, you know, the irony of it all. But that was part of the story, too, was this workplace shooting involving a rehab center where he was actually a supervisor.
Unbelievable. I mean, literally, I mean, this is like the stuff you hear in the movies, you hear in the news, you know, everyone. I mean, obviously we get a lot more shootings these days, and these, you know, I guess these rampages, you know, we have a lot more of them, you know, in the last decade, I would say.
Yeah.
But certainly you don't hear about these things like historically that was, you know, a thing, right? And now you're telling us like this is like back in the days, and it was already happening. People walking and again, that's an odd place to actually go and try to, you know, do this. I mean, there were banks then. I mean, at least you would think that they'd go to a place where there's money.
He wasn't paid. Apparently he was fired, the person. So he was also an immigrant, and I guess. And yeah, he was a disgruntled worker and came in, you know, saying he wanted to get paid, and then whipped out a gun. And my grandfather, we call it chutzpah. He has gall. He has nerve. He spoke with the gunman. I'm not sure that was so smart, but and then wrestled him to the ground. So, well, that's part of my novel is I made up stuff, but he did talk to the gunman, and the gunman said, I'm leaving. And he said, and my grandfather goes, when, you know, like he said, I'm going back to China. And my grandfather goes, when, like, why would you, you know, cause trouble? Why would you talk to him? But, you know, he was instigating him in some way. So he had a lot of bravery, you know, courage to do that. I guess he figured I almost died. They tried to kill me in Europe because I was, you know, with anti-Semitism or what have you. So this was after, this was definitely after the Holocaust. So he was like on borrowed time, you know, figured he had gotten out before the Holocaust. The Holocaust is in the story too. But he probably, I don't know. He probably was like, you know, let me try to save people, or let me try to talk him down or something. I don't know.
Well, I can see that. I mean, you know, someone who was, you know, told that they were terminal, and they've been under oppression, and they see, you know, the bad things. And, you know, I mean, there's a situation where, you know, let me see what I can do. And I guess, you know, it was brave enough to stand to him. And I'm sure things, I don't know the end of the story, what happened to the guy, but it sounds like he was able to kind of change his mind, you know, on this. And, you know, at the end of the day, things, you know, life was saved. And so, there's nothing wrong with that picture. I mean, it sounds simple now as we talk about it, but I'm sure it was not an easy, you know, time for him and or his coworkers at the time. But that actually is something that happens regularly. You know, sometimes you hear these things in the news that someone just walks in with a gun and tries, especially at work. I mean, we've heard about these scenarios that joke. I mean, there's the shootings where these people do mass shootings, and that's another story. But there's a lot of stories about people that go into a workplace because of an argument, and, you know, I mean, every now and then you hear one of those in some newspaper or on TV as well. So It is amazing. But it's funny that your grandfather had all these types of experiences in his own life that actually were all part of his story that you were able to write about. Not everybody can claim that. I mean, that's like how many, you know, of these things, you know, you could possibly have in a story, you know, but you've had quite a bit of good stuff there, good gold, I would say, as your book has the word gold in there. But really, it's good stuff in there. So now, was that the reason you wrote the book, or, you know, as just to honor his legacy, or, you know, was there a purpose to message that to the world? What was the reason, if you don't mind me asking?
So there's actually the first spark of why I chose to write this book was because my grandparents died on the same day, a year apart from each other. And so one went, and then the other one went on the anniversary of her death. And during that time, he was creating these tapes. I just thought there was a story there, you know. I thought that people would find that romantic as I found it, that they actually were the same exact age when they died, because somebody just pointed out to me. So it just adds to it. But she was a year older. So he died a year later. So they were actually same age and a year apart. And in Judaism, the year anniversary of somebody's death is marked in a symbolic way, you know, in a big way. So, you know, that was, I thought that just they went through so much together, and that they died on the same day. So they have the same anniversary of their death. And there were a lot of things like that. There were so many, you know, like I said, there was the shooting, there was the streptomycin, you know, being a clinical trial patient, experimental drug for that. There was the Holocaust. He lost most of his family. He had like 11 siblings, and most of them died in the Holocaust. He got out before the Holocaust. But what's that like to hear about all your whole family dying when you are here and you didn't do enough, or should have been there, whatever, should have taken them with you? So there was that. There was a trolley accident. There was some other mystery that happened involving the Holocaust. So it's a love story. It's a family story. It's Jewish culture, you know, family life. The message would be just, you know, this is just somebody's grandfather. Like, who cares? You know, and basically, like you said, like, most people don't have that. Maybe they do, but nobody leaves it for somebody. Nobody records their life history so that others can learn from it. But they went through a lot back then. And I think our generation, no, we went through the pandemic. I get it. You know, we had some hardship too, but I think most people have it really good compared to those who came here and struggled and had the Great Depression and had wars and had TB. So it just shows what you can go through. You know, they financially, you know, they were on one income, five children, and he was sick, and that wasn't even expected at the time. They were, you know, they were simple people. They were tailors, and they, you know, she was a seamstress. You know, they were on welfare. So, you know, what they went through a lot together.
Well, thank. I mean, again, you're sharing the story, and as you said, not everybody does keep those logs for the next generation to take over, right? That's like, I think. Well, there is that you have an advantage. You're a journalist. You're a writer, so you can see a story when you can literally, you know, you have a tuition, a success for stories, right? That's something that is unique about journalists. I mean, they can see it in the air. I mean, we can be in the same environment. I would think nothing of it, and you would be like, "Oh, here's a story right here, right?" And I mean, it's a fact, right? It's that's real. That makes you different, right? I mean, everybody's got an expertise. That's what a journalist's expertise is to see it, to come up with a story from thin air. I mean, there's elements, and you make it work, right? But this is more than just elements. You had a whole, you know, historic, you know, piece that is related. I mean, the concept of even just the two of them dying in the same day and having the same anniversary of that, it's kind of I mean, you don't hear a lot of that stuff. I mean, maybe there are cases just like that, but how many are documented, right? And it just for it all to line up in a way where you could actually put it in a book and create more to it. That's an impressive piece. But so now I want to go back to the experimental drugs. You know, so they were part of it. Now that became, as you said, the first advancement in TB treatment. Now, just curiosity, is it still part of a treatment today? I don't know if you found out more about that or.
Well, you'll have to look up my story when it comes out in the next couple of days.
Okay, good. All right. So you give us a little bit of
Constitution. It's combined, I think. It's advanced from there. I think it was an injection. And they decided that you know, you had to do it too often, and they wanted something more efficient and than an injection every day. So no, I mean, medicine has come a long way since then. So whatever, it worked. I mean, I think 86 86 or 87 is a nice long life. My dad lived till that long. I think there's, you know, that's a nice long life to be, you know, to spend time with your family all those years. And when I knew them, he was the healthy one and she was the one who was struggling. So, and she went first, only by a year, but she went first. So yes, medicine has come a long way since then. And but it was the forerunner of what we use today to treat the largest infectious disease killer in the world. So he was part of history in that way. And that's probably the biggest part of history that he was. I mean, that's where he's just one of how many went through that. But he's the one that whose granddaughter wrote about him.
Well, actually, just by I guess default, you know, they are kind of assumed to be part of the legacy, because anyone that was with that trial, you know, is kind of like, you know, there's a legacy to them as well in this discussion in your book, because he was not alone, as you said, and anyone that participated or part of that whole, I guess, innovative, you know, research work that's been done and successfully, you know, is part of that. So, hey, you just didn't do it just for him. I mean, I think you did it for a lot of families that, as you said, may not have had the pleasure or privilege to actually have that done to them, but you did. So it's, you know, thank you. And on behalf of all those guys, whoever they are, they might watch the show, they might read the book. They'll be like, hey, listen, my grandfather was there too. You know, they're like,
write your own book.
I don't know if you actually got any testimonies. Did you find out anyone potentially that was in that time that had any linkage to this? No.
No, but people tell me, you know, they relate to the book in this way or the other way. You know, their grandfather, they know an uncle who drove a trolley, or, you know, I don't hear as much about the TB part, but I have heard of many that have grandparents or people that they know that died on the same day. So I thought I was unique. I didn't know when I started that it's not that common. But you know, you hear about coincidences. I mean, I'm the third Ronnie Robbins in my family. Many of my family members are born on the 5th, you know, 3 of my 4 family members are on the 5th. There's commonality everywhere. I go all the way to the South and meet somebody who's from Long Island. You know, I mean, it just, life works out that way. No, I haven't heard from that. I have heard from other people who, you know, who find some other thing that resonates with them. A lot of the Jewish culture resonates with people, whether they're Jewish or not. They said their family is very similar and they had similar discussions. And
here's a fact, right? We're in the States. It's based on immigration. I mean, it's an immigrant country. I mean, again, people may argue about that, but it's a fact. I mean, somebody came from somewhere, you know, historically in the last 300 years or so, you know, and so that's what it is. I mean, other than the natives, the indigenous, you know, folks, you know, that's kind of like what it is. So everybody can relate to, you know, we have something in common with your story because of our ancestors. So there is that. I think that's a great thing. And you said it, there's culture. I mean, you talked about the Holocaust and, you know, the wars, those things are, you know, they happen, they happen in, and people are always going to be able to relate to those things. The pandemic, it's something that we all experience. So everybody can relate to what that looks like to have a respiratory disease, talking, keeping it on the health, you know, concept. So it's all there. So you've actually covered a lot of angle, you know, by default in the book, you know, and a lot of people can connect to it one way or the other. So it's just that. And I love the concept that, hey, let's look at the article because we'll have more nuggets in there. So that's good. So the article is being published where to, like in the Medscape? Is that where you're
going? No, Atlanta Journal Constitution, but
okay, Atlanta Journal. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I heard that. Okay, yes. Yeah. All right. So, folks, you're watching, listening, look up the article. So we want to take a little deep dive and learn more about this whole story. But the book is available, as it says, Barnes & Noble's, you know, Amazon, right? I mean, is it Amazon?
Yes, I don't see Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's on there. Barnes & Noble.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Stop.
Walmart, Goodreads, Target, not everywhere. The Books A Million. On my website also, which is listed there. So yeah, it's available everywhere. And I'm all over social media too, so people can see when I post my stories. I found today Muckrack has all of my articles. I didn't realize that they were keeping track of everything I've written, like 300 and something articles. I don't know how far that back goes, but there were like 346 articles on there. I've never really counted my articles, so I have no idea. And that's just since, I don't know when Muckrack began, but apparently somebody's keeping track of me. I just see them and put them on my website or put them on my Facebook or, you know, on social media, but somebody else is keeping track of my articles, which is nice.
Well, so I do have a question. I'm just curious because you're a true journalist, a reporter, you know, hardcore from the beginning, right? That's what you've done and that's what you do. Now, what is your take on, because I mentioned kind of like, you know, journalism is larger now with more, you know, different things. There's new media, there's blogging and all this stuff. Do you find that it is kind of diluted a little bit from the original way? I mean, what's your opinion about that? Just, you know, and again, without offending anybody, because listen, folks, whatever you do, you do. But certainly there is hardcore journalism, which is, you know, how it's traditionally being perceived. But there's the new age now. We have a lot of ways. And pretty much everybody today can, you know, go on social media and present something, right? And talk about things. You know, what is your take on that? Just because, I like I said, I don't have real journalism reporters all the time, you know, to interview. So I have, this is a great time for me to ask this question and share it with like a true view of how you see it in this competitive world today.
So everyone wants to be a writer. And I will also go back to something you said, and you said it's easier for me to you know, to write a novel. Maybe, but not really. Everyone can write a novel. Everyone can post anything out there. The question is, how much research did you put into it? You know, were you trained as a journalist to do that? If you were, then you understand that you've got to back up things and get others to corroborate your stories. You know, you need sources. You can't just go by what one person says. There's biases, there's misinformation. So there's a lot out there, but you really got to be selective and know. I mean, I think media is lumped into one big group, you know, media. But there are different segments of it, and then there are different biases. But I really feel like that there are also journalists that are trained journalists that are putting out news that you can depend on, that is reliable, that is backed up by other sources, that is researched. So without the bias, because we're told and we're trained not to be biased. Now, whether that slips through, it should not. It's got to be, you got to walk the line. I have very strong ethics about this, so I can't tell you where to go for your news. You can certainly go for your news to somebody who agrees exactly what you want them, will say what exactly you want to hear, that has your side of the story represented. Or you can go to a daily newspaper, which is supposed to be unbiased. you know, if I'm considered a hardcore journalist, which I think I am, then there's high ethics to be maintained. And this is why my book is fiction, because since I made up stuff and played and twisted the facts, I could have labeled it like literary nonfiction or biography, which it does get labeled as a lot. But I made up stuff and I didn't feel like I should say it was nonfiction because I twisted the facts a bit. So that's why I labeled it fiction. And I got to deal with that. I got to live with that I labeled it that. And it might have done better if it was considered nonfiction. It's got a lot based on nonfiction, but since I made up stuff and twisted the facts and changed the names, I didn't feel comfortable as a hardcore journalist doing
again,
that.
That's the book. That's a novel, right? As you said, that's different. But when you write the articles in real news and real information, that's different. That's research. And by the way, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of biases, you know, in opinions for everything. And there's a little bit of everybody out there, and you can pick up whatever you want, and you can get a lot of this positive, negative, your opinion, the opposite opinion. We see it on TV, we see it in articles, we see it on radio, we see it in podcasts, we see it everywhere. I mean, it's just the way it is. And you know, so there's local news, there's worldwide news, there's all kind of news, you know, out there that you can also watch. Everybody's got this, and you're right. So if the ethics are missing, that's a problem. By the way, ethics is core for everybody. I mean, I don't care what you do out there. If you have no ethics, and you're not really ethical in how you present and you get the resources and stuff the right way, you must potentially mislead, you know, you may mislead people and opinion. Now, there's just debates about that. Some people can say, well, there are people that purposely do that because they want, you know, people to sway one way or the other. Now, again, it is a subject, but the one thing I've always said is that everybody can hear whatever they want, read whatever they want, but it's up to them to really seek the truth and do the research. Because, yeah, I mean, I read one article, I read multiple articles. I mean, even when we're in the healthcare space, right? You know, you and I, we had a brief discussion. There's a lot of debate about these things, right? Like, is it merit? What's the merit? Is it worth it? Is it not worth it? The drugs, this, the trials. Some people can say, oh my God, we use in humans. But you're right. Humans are the reason why, you know, we are able to actually test, you know, do it so we can actually have something. So it depends how you position yourself on the angle. I mean, some people, like, I can understand it, you know, and some people may debate with me like, Hurricane, you're nuts. You know, you cannot justify why humans are being used. And I get it. We are the population. I mean, when, like, I had a discussion a couple of weeks back in a different show, and we talked about, like, how there's different drug trials, right? So whether for TB or any other drug, right? And the way it works, there is the first ones in that lab, and they use it on the little true guinea pigs and the little mice and stuff. But then there is also clinical trials in humans, you know, which they have a sample of a universe of people that have similar the disease or they tested. And then once it meets a certain criteria of success, then it goes to the actual general public and as the in the market. And even that is really still a trial, because the true trial, you know, the true trial really is, you know, when the feedback comes in over time. And there is an actual way of, and this is what I discovered, is that, you know, companies can actually retract drugs from the marketplace once they have, you know, so much report of, you know, adverse, you know, reaction and things like that. And the same way goes when there's good side effects of the drug, and they may just use it for a different purpose or repurpose it. Like there are drugs out there. Like one example recently is metformin, which is for diabetes, but now it's used for anti-aging and beauty and stuff like that. So go figure, you know, one thing, you know, is leading to the other. So these are things, these are real. But again, as a journalist, you know, you look at the facts, you look at the story, you look at what's the message, and you also get, as you said, the back end. And by the way, I my closest experience with something that's similar. Now, it could be portrayed one way or the other, but I was working on a company in the healthcare, and there was a big article that came out in the New York Times, which did affect the company or the industry at a point, you know, adversely, because the article was about, you know, these companies that were kind of doing something that was not accurate or legal. As a matter of fact, you know, the company was had to pay fines eventually. They had to settle with the state and the feds. And so it became a little bit of a you know, crisis and a lot of legislation that kind of, but there was a lot of political stuff involved into this. And this was like 2011, you know, in the social daycare concepts and things like that in New York. You're in New York. You're from New York, so you know how these things are. But so the article was about that, and so it kind of created a whole stuff. But it was really, you know, to bring to the public this. And had it not gone to that level, maybe, you know, the government would not have done, you know, what they had to do, and maybe address some of the laws and tighten up a little bit, you know, how things will be in that particular, you know, industry. So it does, and we see that in pharma. We can see it in a lot of different areas where an article comes out, and then now we have changes in legislation, changes in the local, you know, the whatever government agency that runs these areas. They'll have to tighten up their buttons a little better and get, you know, scrutinized, you know, processes, you know, so things get better for our consumers. So yes, I mean, there is that. I mean, but someone say, well, you know, your article, you know, caused a lot of hardship, but someone could say your article caused a lot of, you know, good, because now, you know, people are not going to get hurt through the process, right? So, I mean, there's different things. Again, it's all about the purpose, and that's a different thing, but that's something that it's part of the job, right? You do what you do, and people.
Well, we're watchdogs, you know, and we're also recorders of history, you know. So there's a lot of power in the job. There, we don't get huge amount of money for it, and it's a lot of hard work and a lot of hours of not getting that much pay.
Well, it is a tough job, and I, you know, yeah. And again,
it's a tough job, but it's a very important job.
And someone's gotta do it.
As to why the media gets attacked too, you know, and you know, and we're the cause of all evil, you know, to some people, you know, which is a little scary, but. If it wasn't for us, we might not have known everything that's going on in the world, or, you know, make sure that people are held accountable when they do the wrong things or companies. Well,
but I like that. I mean, you use the word watchdog. I mean, somebody's got to watch, you know, and you know, listen, I do have a press badge too. And trust me, when you walk with your badge into a place, they become a little bit better, you know, than if you didn't have it. I've tried that in some areas where, oh, okay, so they, I don't know how, but there is a fear of like, oh my God, you're gonna cause problem for me. But you can always sense that, like, you know, if they're not 100%, they get a little nervous. I don't know why, but I think there is, as you said, there's some power to that, because you can really bring problems to them and or be a great thing. I mean, listen, you can put a great article about a place like, hey, this is one of the best locations, blah, 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 which we see that in influence today. Or you can just destroy the place by just making a bad article about anybody, which, by the way, I'm not saying just throw in stuff because of whatever, you know, your personal opinion. But if it's backed with facts and it's a real thing, you see something that's wrong and you actually report on it, that can cause problems. So sometimes people get a little bit accountable when they feel that they're in face of someone that actually has the ears of the public, you know, very easily accessible. And so therefore they're going to be a lot more, you know, I guess, cautious, or at least they'll be more respectful to this. It shouldn't be that way. Unfortunately, we should all be doing the right thing by default. But again, ethics should be across the board. I mean, if you have go through any licensing, you know, procedure, or like, you know, state license type of, you know, concept, ethics is part of the courses, period. I mean, I've been in real estate, I've been in the insurance space, and we have, you know, continuing education all the time. And one of the courses that comes back, or at least the chapters that are always there, is ethics, 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 ethics. So ethics are big. And, you know, sometimes those are the things that kind of miss, you know, get missed in the process of industries or businesses and so on and so forth. And someone comes in and, hey, watch out. We're watching. We got our eyes on you. Makes a big difference. Now, in that same tone, with your work with WebMD and Medscape and, you know, all the, like the healthcare pieces, like the article stuff, you know, anything that you want to share with us on that world? I mean, because that's a pretty big word. I mean, you guys do the work to track the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, I get a lot of information through the CDC. I mean, I'm on the press releases, the WHO, I mean, the Department of Health. So I get all those press releases, you know, early, you know, what do you call it? Access, I guess, like when they come out, they release them. And
before embargo? Before embargo? They're on embargo or something? Okay.
Yeah. I don't...
Well, they're embargoed. They're embargoed. You have to hold on to it until the embargo releases, and then you can put it out there. Or not. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know if that's what you meant. Okay.
Yeah, well, so I have like access to press releases, like, you know, so you as a media company, and basically they share with you the new stuff, whatever they want the world to, that is okay to share. So you basically get them, and then you can talk about freely or share. But so it's amazing that you have the access. Now, it's curated or not, I don't know. You know, they're going to tell you what they want to tell you. I mean, that's just what it is. But certainly you can dig in more to either corroborate the story or find a glitch in the story, whatever. I mean, that's, you can go that way too. I mean, if you feel it, I mean, I'm not, you know, it's like Lois Lane, right? You know, that's her work, right? She goes after the things, right? She went crazy. I mean, again, I'm talking about fiction, you know, but it's iconic, right? But so that's the concept. It works. But I have actually a real Lois. you are real, not fiction. You do this work. So it's a big deal.
Ronnie, right? Robbins, Lois Lane. I guess that works.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, I'm sure that's someone that in your life, I mean, Superman and Lois Lane is an old story, right? I don't know. Maybe there's something that actually that got you the motivation, you know, early on to push towards that job. But I mean, she did show in those movies, you know, how, you know, you got to be like a literally, you know, a true watchdog and look at things and investigate and do stuff. I mean, even the newer
version. It's very serious.
It is serious. I mean, and you got to dig in, and you got to, you know, sometimes it's risky too. I mean, you never know where you know, it's like there's a snake somewhere that can bite you. There's all kind of risks that come with it, but it takes bravery to do the work and really know what you're doing. And certainly you've been doing it long enough that you know all those tricks and you make it work. All right. So again, my question was just about the articles and things like in healthcare. Anything like for people that want to, like, what are the sources? I mean, you know, the right sources, are they, you know, I guess they give information that maybe in particular, because there's a lot of, I guess, potential skeptics sometimes that come along with when we talk about articles. So people are like, you know, well, this is WebMD, maybe they want us to hear this, or I mean, and because, and I'm not going controversial, but you have these things, just your opinion, true opinion about how that works. I mean, you talk about ethics, and I'm sure that you do your stuff correctly, but in just like, you know, to ease the minds of our people, audiences that might have a question about,
I guess read and then make your own judgments and do your own research. I would say, you know, I think there are reliable sources. I believe those that I work for are reliable. They employ journalists. You know, they go through a careful process to make sure that they have quality, writers for them, you know, who have, strong background in this kind of work. So, you know, we are spending the time on our end, making sure that these articles are accurate, that we back them up, that we cite sources for it. It's not coming from me, and it's not coming from a press release without some other people confirming that information. So in anything you read, I think that you have to know by reading them often enough, a different source, that they are reliable. You know, I think we know which ones are, you know, the ones that have been around a long time and that haven't been known for their biases. Mainstream, yes, mainstream. But I think you just have to be selective and decide where you want to go for your news, and know who the quality of the writers determine that, and then make your own decisions with your own research as to who you're going to believe. I mean, just because you see something in the paper, you know, I'm one to believe that newspapers do all the work so that you don't have to do as much work. But I still think you should go to your doctor and you know, see what your doctor advises on different things. And a lot of my sources will say that you know, you should still, if you see these kind of issues, go to your doctor. Because I write wellness pieces for, you have to remember that I write wellness pieces for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and I write medical students and residents story. I write about medical students and residents for Medscape. So I'm not, I used to write for WebMD as a freelancer, but I don't now. But they're sister publications. But I trust the ones that I've picked to write for are legitimate, are respectable, are have been around the block for a long time, have proven that they are responsible to get you this news. But I still think you can do your own research and make your own decisions as an individual.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the answer because, as you said, I mean, yeah, you guys do the work. And you said, you know, there's different types of places where you can get the information. You got to select the ones that have the history, the trustworthiness, and the respect. And as you said, the accountability, that's proven. But also it's our, you know, job as people to actually look and really seek the right information and compare it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, listen, I can compare things and see and make a decision based on that. But you're right. Like if it's an article about wellness and you're not sure, you still have your physician, whoever your wellness advisor that can, you know, give you a, you know, kind of match up, you know, yes, it is the right way to do it. No, it's not the right. And why? But again, it is buyer beware, as we say, right? You know, everybody's got to be responsible to make the decisions correctly, accordingly, and, you know, follow up, you know, procedure or due diligence process that actually gets you the right information. So thank you for that.
And I want to just also disclosure that I am not a representative of any of those. I am just a contractor. I am just a journalist. I have one opinion. I do not represent any company.
Again, that too. I mean, whether you work, you know, as an employee or a freelancer, you are basically, you represent your research and stuff like that. And again, these companies will not take your article if they felt that otherwise, right? I mean, they also are very selective on who and what they publish. I mean, there's editors. You actually were, I think you were the associate editor at a journal or a publication. So it's there. I mean, it's not like, you know how this works. There's a lot of layers of selection and double check and check before the information hits the air and the waves, right? You can't just put it on print and send it out like that without anybody checking things, right? So it is a big, you know, I mean, again, media is all around us. I mean, information is all around us, but it's really the source is where you need to go and really do your research. Well, so that's on the media side, but as an author, you know, how hard was it for you to write the book? I mean, you got the content, but, you know, was it easy to go through the process? Would you recommend that to anyone that wants to write, you know, like through your experience? What do you tell people that want to write, whether as a journalist or write just as, you know, novels and just authors?
I say, do it.
All
just
right,
do it.
That's it.
Nike commercial. which I also don't represent. But it is hard work. It took me a long time because I was also raising my children at the time and also freelancing. So I had like three things going on. I always seem to have three things going on. Like I work for two different publications now. Sometimes their deadlines are the same day. It's not so easy. I'm used to working hard. But I would say do it. I mean, it took me probably about 7 years and I had a lot of, I didn't really trust myself. I had cold feet a lot. You know, I had written, of course, I had been published and written in major publications and was a published journalist, a published writer. But this was a new area and I didn't quite trust what, if I had what it could take. So I was afraid and I delayed. And I was raising my kids. So I won an award. I entered the Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award contest. And then I entered a few more times and won and realized, no, it's ready now. But then it took me a long time. I could have self-published. You know, I was told a lot that nobody wants to read another immigrant story. So that, and a lot of the authors, including best-selling authors of my publisher, Amsterdam Publishers, they were also told nobody wants to read another immigrant story. And yet, you know, tell it to the best sellers out there. And everyone is eating up immigrant stories right now. So, and have been for quite a while. So, but that was what I was told at the time. So I had a hard time getting a professional publisher. And once I got after so many years. I got the professional publisher. I worked with her for 2 years, and we had a legal dispute, and I had to find another one. So it took me some 20 years from start to finish to get it to where it was published professionally. And it's won 6 awards since then, and or 5 awards since then. And it's in the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. It's been written about in the Jerusalem Post and the Washington Jewish Week and some others. And I was in a big book festival here with people like Nikki Haley and Andrew Young and a number of big names, authors, too, others. So, you know, little bits of achievement here and there. And I'm still working on the marketing of it so that it, you know, because it hasn't quite taken off yet. The goal is to get more hands of gold in golden hands, but in more golden hands. But no, not easy. Not easy for a journalist. Yes, I'm a good writer. You know, I'll admit that I'm a good writer. So it's little stories within, but I was afraid. It was a new area, and it was my first time, and I wasn't so I have confidence issues. So I think that might have held me back a little bit. So a little easier as a journalist to write a good story. Writing a good story does not guarantee anything.
Well, thank you. At least for the audiences, there's a few things that they can take, right? First of all, you want to write a book, go for it. You know, don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Is it easy? No. Expect that it's going to take some time. Depends on what you have, you know, in your plate at that time. It could take a year. It could take 5. It could take 10, you know, from start to finish. It doesn't matter, but just pursue it. And when you get there, it's going to happen. So for those of you that are watching or listening, it is, you know, a path. If that's what you want, it's an ambition, you make it work. And I think there's a lot of experts out there that say, you know, as part of your bucket list, you write a book in life. You know, again, that may be something that is becoming or will become, whether you're a writer or not, it, you know, as you said, it could be a bio, it could be a fiction, it could be anything. But the idea is you could write something that you can leave behind in this world. And, you know, it's going to give something to read. And as what you said about, you know, sometimes people tell you, oh, there's enough stories about immigrants, but immigrant stories typically come with ambition, resilience, you know, trials and revolutions, and, you know, like really success stories and things like that. So there are inspirational and motivational stories, you know, and those would always be needed no matter what, right? And they vary from different backgrounds, different types of, you know, elements, and the stories change. They also are great for movies and documentaries and things like that. And that's the other part, you know, and you see a lot of these, you know, books that translate into a movie that is, you know, really like very inspirational, motivational. It sometimes could be a business, could be other things, could be just the fiction part of it, but it's done. So bottom line, folks, if you want to write a book, you go for it. That's it. As you said, just do it. And again, credits to Nike. We don't work with them. We're not endorsing them, but that's their line. But that's a line that we use every day. I mean, if you tell someone a motivation, you know, or inspiration, you know, quote, you just kind of like, you end it with like, hey, listen, only way to do it, just do it. Make it happen, right? Yeah, just right. Make it happen, right? Well, right. So there is. So that's great. Thank you for that advice. And yeah, so, well, first of all, you know, we're about the end of the show here, but is there anything you want to kind of give our audiences as your partner gift and wisdom? Some words of advice.
Don't let obstacles get in the way, you know, and know you can achieve your goals. It might take a long time, but just stick to your guns, I would say, and never give up. Know that those who went before us had it a lot tougher than we did. If you read my book, you'll come out saying, oh wow, they did all that. Why am I whining about my life and this and that? So,
true.
Yeah. I mean, they paved the way to make it easier for us, which I think we have it. We're pretty privileged. I know I am, living in America and with all the freedoms that we have here. Yeah. We had the pandemic. They had it much worse. And just you know, everybody's story is important. Somebody might say, you know, this was just your grandfather, who cares? But everyone has something in their life that they can point to where they are super special and did something amazing. And we just got to preserve those kind of stories, especially with that, the former generation, the older generation, it would be nice if we recorded more of their histories, because I bet you they have a lot to share. Also, I'm writing my dad's book now. I'm writing a story about my dad. So hopefully that'll come out. Mighty Arm is the working title. He was a blacksmith. He died about a year ago. So when I get time, I'm trying to work on that. It's an unusual trait. Another male figure in my life that's an inspiration for what he did with his life and how what a different path he went on. So all I can tell you is, hopefully you'll buy my book, pass it on to others, and let me know what you think about it, and find some relevance in your own life to your own ancestors. Maybe dig up their stories, and you don't have to write a book, but maybe appreciate what happened to pave the way for you to have a better life.
I can just thank you, by the way, for that advice, and I love what you said. Never give up. Don't give up. Do it. Make it happen. Right. But also, I love what you said about the idea that, yes, there are individuals in your life, but they can be really a motivation for someone to dig in and find out about their families, their roots, their ancestors and their grandparents and, what their journey looked like. And even as you said, even if you don't write a book, we can all sometimes be, happy about what our achievements, from our grandfathers and grandparents and even parents, right? And maybe there is a lineage in your family that you're watching and listening right now that has historic, position that you didn't even have. I mean, a lot of people do these ancestry.com and all the stuff to find who their heritage and their lineage and their DNA stuff. But you never know. They could be just as close as your grandparents, things that you might not have known about, Why not? And maybe it gives you the opportunity to be proud of who they were and what they achieved. And there's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, we should be proud of our parents and grandparents. In general, we're here because they managed to get us here somehow, right? So we should be thankful for that. Now, some people may have issues with their families, and we're not touching on that part of it. Your relationship is one thing. But in general, it doesn't matter. Even if it was a bad experience, maybe there's something to reflect there too, like maybe to learn from it. I mean, we learn from good and bad experiences, right? And we hope that it's all good. But you know what? There's got to be something that's that. Or at least, get motivated to write a book, just period. And it could be pure fiction, nothing to do with your ancestors or your grandparents. Mm-hmm. But, why not? And congrats on the new book. So that's another, milestone that you have. And that's the other thing. Like you're working. But here's the thing, right? This is the thing. You're sharing that, not only you've done these things, but you also are working on things. And we can take that to the bank as, folks, we don't have to settle. We don't have to stop. You keep doing. When you finish the first one, whatever that is, that's milestone one. You go for the next one and you keep going. And that's how we proceed in life. So, and the more we do of that, the more we have achievements and successes. And it doesn't have to be awards. It doesn't be anything. It could be just the fact that you feel that you've done something that is, again, worthwhile in your life and a legacy. And why not? We should all have a legacy at a point of our lives, even so that our grandkids can say, hey, that's you. So today we are here, maybe two generations down, they'll be like, they're going to look back to what we have done as the audiences that we're watching and listening to the show today. So hopefully we all do good. And so there's a good story behind to live behind, into the next generations. All right. Well, Ronnie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Yes.
You're welcome. All right, folks, this is it. This is the end of our show. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. You've learned a few things. And so do check out the link, where the book is on the job description. And that's it. That's a wrap. I'm Hurricane H. We'll be talking soon. Your daily show. Your topic.